This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everyone, to this week's edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Adam the Jock Straczynski. On today's show, this AEW star, currently done with AEW, this WWE star is going to take some time away. And this AEW champion has been hurt, and this WWE star is battling an injury. We're going to break all that down, talk about who's dealing with what. Of course, we had one of the biggest nights in wrestling, actually the biggest two nights in wrestling, with WrestleMania 40 taking place last weekend. We got to get into all of that, sort through all of it. We've got a new champion. We've got to discuss what's next for him and what's next for the Bloodline, as well as AEW probably shooting itself in the foot. And if you live through the WCW days, you know what I mean. It's like a flashback. To the Vince Russo era. It's not good. We're going to talk about all of that. Help me break it all down, sort through all of it, telling me that I'm not a maniac, because he might be a maniac. We might both be maniacs. He's the one. He's the only. He's my tag team partner. He is the Doc, John Macaroon. What's up, cuz?
It's the podcast after WrestleMania, getting ready, firing up the equipment at 8:57. I love it. I love the opportunity to break down what happened this week. SmackDown was at LCA. It was wild. A turning of the tide for the Bloodline. We're going to recap WrestleMania, which was wild all the way through in regards to really Roman Reigns really handing over the reins of the company to Cody Rhodes. And it appears, at least business-wise, that Cody Rhodes is ready to sell the shit out of merchandise for the WWE. And hey, that's the bottom line. When you sell
$1 million on WrestleMania weekend, that's pretty good.
Exactly. When you sell $1 million in merchandise, the whole damn company will come out of the back to celebrate you. They don't care. Triple H breaking the third wall. You got Pritchard coming down. They don't care. They're like, look, if you're in catering, come on down. And it was wild. But I thought WrestleMania did live up to the hype. But what sucked was, really, to me, having an outdoor venue is just too chaotic. They got to stop with that. I thought that it ruined Saturday completely. The way in which that card stacked Saturday and Sunday, Saturday should have been the marquee wrestling event of the decade with who was on it. But it just felt like maybe the weather, circumstances, and it kind of felt like, based on what Triple H said in comments after WrestleMania, that Saturday was intended to set the table for Sunday. If you bought tickets for Saturday, you didn't get the event that many people thought it was going to be, and a lot of the matches flopped. Maybe it was weather, maybe it was circumstance, nerves, I don't know what it was, but if you go back and listen to last week's episode, you and I were giddy about what Saturday could present. But in totality, Sunday trumped Saturday by a lot, and it was crazy to see, because I literally in a million years would never think that the Jey Uso match would tank and just be a super kick party and not have a lot of the things that we wanted in it. A lot of the matches went 12 minutes or less. And yes, the final couple matches saved the night, but by and large, Saturday was really disappointing as compared to Sunday. Maybe it was set up that way in regards to setting the table, but it's a show in and of itself. And I didn't think the performers maybe weren't given enough of an opportunity to get their shit over. It was crazy to see, to me, the difference between Saturday and Sunday. It was worlds apart.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I thought, as a whole, WrestleMania was a lot of fun. I thought both days were good. But obviously, day two stood out over day one. And when we were going into this, we definitely thought day one was going to be the card to be topped. And it really didn't work that way. And this isn't the first time that they've done these outdoor venues, and isn't the first time that they've done WrestleMania this way. I feel like when they do these outdoor events, it just adds in so many different factors that you have to be accountable for, right? You got to be accountable for the weather. And we live here in Michigan. We know that the weather is incredibly difficult to account for. So you have to put a canopy over the ring. It's windy. There's a bunch of wind gusts coming. It's cold. So what do? They invent a heated ring, which is really, really cool. But in the end, it doesn't always work. We've seen this with during COVID with AEW, when they would have a little bit of like a rainstorm because they were in Florida, the ring would get wet. And you've seen this with WrestleMania specifically, where there'd be a little bit of moisture on top of the ring or on top of the ropes, and guys are slipping and falling, and it kind of messes up moves, and it makes things incredibly difficult. I don't understand why you've got to do these things outside. I think it's a fun little niche event if that's what you want to do. But you know what? Save the Raw after Mania for that. If you want, save the SmackDown after Mania for that, or do the SmackDown before Mania for that. You know, you can do any one of your NXT events. You can do those outside. I don't think your WrestleMania events need to be outside. You can find a bigger stadium indoors and do those things there. All that being said, I thought the Philly crowd was great. I thought the Philly crowd was a lot of fun with all of this. I thought they did their job. When you go to these live events, you play a part. You have a job to do. I thought the Philly crowd did a great job, especially and specifically on night two. I thought they were fantastic. Let's jump into what took place, because I thought this was a lot of fun. I thought this was a great two-day spectacle. And really, at this point, WrestleMania is a four-day spectacle. You got the SmackDown before. You've got everything that takes place on that Friday night. Then you've got Saturday's WrestleMania and everything that takes place that day leading up to WrestleMania. Then you've got WrestleMania on Sunday, and then you've got the Raw after Mania, which really helps set the table. And honestly, we can even go as far as saying the SmackDown after WrestleMania, because this year it was absolutely fantastic. So you got basically, 5 days of WrestleMania action that we've got to kind of cut through here. So we kicked off WrestleMania night one. Rhea Ripley defeats Becky Lynch to retain the women's title. You had some issues with this match. You thought it was a little bit clunky. You didn't necessarily like it. I thought it was a good match. I didn't understand how they were trying to – I don't know if they're just trying to make Becky look better in defeat or not, but they kept talking about her 102 fever. I don't think we necessarily needed to know that. You could have mentioned it once, maybe twice. That seemed to be a thing that was mentioned throughout her match. I don't think it really added anything to it. I think overall it was a solid match. Did you need to constantly hear that Becky was dealing with illness to get the point across that, hey, she's still a badass even though she's losing to Rhea? I don't think it was needed. I thought this was the right call, though. I thought Rhea needed to win this match. What were your thoughts on this opening belt?
Yeah, it was the opening bout. It sets the table for WrestleMania. And you obviously the critique afterwards, knowing what we learned about the two performers, kind of makes it harsh to say, well, this match kind of didn't live up to the hype. But if you got Rhea Ripley having a massive panic attack beforehand, her nerves are shot, she's all over the place mentally, really probably understanding that, hey, this is the opening match of the biggest card in the history of the world. I mean, I would expect anybody to be really nervous. And then you had Becky Lynch being sick. Look, I understood the match, the psychology, the way it went down, but it wasn't crisp. It wasn't fluid. It just had some like moments where you recognize, okay, there's some, you know, moves here that could have been done and performed a little bit crisper. It didn't have a moment where I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to remember this match. And it sucked, you know, because you recognize, okay, this is the opening bout of the biggest WrestleMania, and it wasn't as crisp. And the crowd, you know, for whatever reason, they were into it a little bit, but they didn't captivate the way in which, basically, the way in which I kind of wrote my notes for this was, the hype for WrestleMania got so large, so big, and my permeating thought was, on Saturday at least, the hype promos were so much better than the matches that it was clearly established to me that it was something that was completely different. All the hype videos far exceeded what was going on. I didn't like it. I just put my notes where it didn't offer a lot. You know, that was my notes for Rhea Ripley versus Becky. It didn't offer me a lot.
All right. So, look, like I said, I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good opening match. I don't think it was to the level that both competitors could normally reach. Like this on a Rhea Ripley scale out of like 1 to 10, this was probably a 7-8. For Becky Lynch, this was probably a 7. We've seen them have better matches. But I think overall, it did its job. I think the right person won. You told this story with Becky dealing with her illness, so it's what it was. The next match, to be honest with you, me and you accidentally understood things. When we went to go do our picks, we did not do the picks correctly, I guess. I did not realize, and we talked about it. We threw it in there as, hey, like fantasy booking, basically. I did not realize that both belts were going to be separated here. Both belts have been separated in the tag division. A-Town Down won the SmackDown titles. Awesome Truth and R-Truth won the Raw tag team titles. What do you make of them separating the belts here? Do you feel like they did a good enough job of really explaining that that was a possibility? Because like I thought one team had to win both belts. When I threw it out there last week, I was like, oh, this would be interesting if this was the way that they would separate the belts, because I know that they kind of wanted to do that for a while. What were your thoughts on this match? Because I felt like the rules for this match were a little unclear. I thought this was a bit of a fun match to watch. I know I celebrated incredibly hard when R-Truth won the Raw titles. I'm assuming you were a little bit devastated because you had Judgment Day winning this as far as the picks go. But I'm happy that they separated the belts. I wish they would have explained it a little bit more in detail going into this match, because I was learning on the fly with this match.
So were the fans, cuz. We are not wrong. When many people saw it for the first time when it debuted up there, when the two belts were up there, people were like, oh, this is a cue that they're going to split the belts, which still one team could have won both belts. And looking mm-hmm. back on it, when I listen back to the podcast, I'm like, oh my God, my prediction's stupid, because if Damian Priest was going to cash in, they would not have him be the world champion and the tag team champion. So, you know, in the end, you know, we're recording live. We're thinking on the fly. We're doing our thoughts. And to me, until the major event happened, it probably didn't sit that Damian Priest could be a world champion. So the first step, though, into the match, if you're Catch Republic, you got to be pissed. It didn't refresh the intro from the R-Truth package. And the crazy part was Michael Cole is calling it out as they're walking down the ring. They're like, oh, well, looks like production's sleeping back there, and you're still seeing R-Truth video when Catch Republic is down there. And that sucks. You know, to me, the preciseness of WrestleMania, that also made my notes here. I put truck production issues at WrestleMania. Are you serious? Look, you got to be crisp. You got to be tight. But in the end, the boys did the work. The airplane spot from Tyler Bate was sick. Waller and Theory winning was perfect for the way in which you can progress it, and the way in which they teased it back and forth with Judgment Day and the others as well. Everybody worked their ass off. And to your point that you made last week, R-Truth and Miz getting a moment, it's well-deserved. It's kind of like an achievement. Like, boys, you worked hard. You are awesome. You are workmanlike. You deserve a moment. And specifically, R-Truth, to get a win at WrestleMania, for him to be the guy celebrating. I mean, the man's in his 50s and I think got his first WrestleMania win. So that's crazy. So
yeah, that is crazy.
That is crazy. It's not right. And for Triple H to honor somebody that's been in the company, making moments, making memories, good for you, R-Truth. You lived up to it. And his promos that he did beforehand were great. The funniness that he did, the stuff that he's done has been, even though it's comic relief, the man's been there 20 years. He deserved a moment. And for him to be a tag champ again is a great opportunity.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Our next match, Rey Mysterio and Andrade defeated Escobar and Dominic Mysterio via pinfall. The match after that was Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso. And you've already kind of touched on it. This match was given roughly, I think, 8 minutes. Ugh. And it never really told the story that we all wanted to be told. It felt like this match was incredibly rushed, and you never really got anything that you were looking for. It felt like this was just kind of, I think you got more out of the beatdown that you got on night two than you really did out of this match. And that's depressing. That's upsetting, because this match had a lot going for it. There was so much invested in this match. And for it to be so quick, so short. Yeah, Jey Uso won. Honestly, when Jey Uso hit his finishing move, I was like, Jimmy's kicking out. And then Jimmy didn't kick out. And I was like, well, that was short and unfulfilling. It honestly, it's like having sex with me. It was short and unfulfilling. It was not good. It was very upsetting. Look, as far as this match goes, do you think that they helped close the book on this Jey and Jimmy Uso rivalry, or is this something that is going to continue? Now, I know what we've seen on SmackDown on Friday night. So it leads me to believe that, yes, this book is closed. But going – like coming away from this match after night one, I was like, well, there's going to be some continuation here. They're not done yet. What were your thoughts after this match finished? Not so much after what you've seen on Friday night, but after this match, were you like, okay, we're going to continue to build towards maybe SummerSlam? Because that was my thought initially.
Because it's just disappointing. You told a story. You gave them time. And all it did, it's never good when the reaction is, man, this was poorly produced. They're not doing any moves. They're not doing anything more than super kicks. Who produced this? This isn't and what sucked is, at least from the Twitter reaction, was this is why these two are not single stars. That was the reaction was, look, this is why Jimmy and Jay aren't really main event. They can't have a match. They can't deliver. I don't care if they give you chicken. If I don't care if Jason Jordan, who was revealed to be the producer, says, look, you're going to do 50 super kicks. You're like, bro, fuck that. We're not doing that. We're going to do some hip drags. We're going to do some moves. We're going to tell a quick story of pain. I mean, the simplest story is Jay getting out to an early advantage and just whipping his brother's ass and just being struggling to close it. You know, it's a simple psychology. I mean, simple psychology, which is Jay struggling to beat his brother's ass, knowing just like having a little hesitation before doing the moves. They did that all the time.
They did that. Jimmy just taking advantage of it and whipping his ass the whole time.
Back and forth. They did it a little bit at the end, but it left everybody. I just put WTF. This match sucked. And it didn't. That's simple as that. The match sucked. And I think they both would recognize it. They would admit it. Down the road, they're going to be asked about it. And they're going to say, yeah, you know, maybe time had a constraint. But holy cow, was that an example of the promo, the hype videos really outliving what was accomplished in the ring. It was disappointing. It was sad. And it didn't leave me wanting more. And you said it. The most damning statement is they had a little bit the next night that far outweighed anything they did in the ring. Why did you honor the Young Bucks with a super kick party in your match? You needed to show that you could. I mean, you guys are not new to wrestling. You know all the moves. I mean, you could have figured it out and got it done. And for Jason Jordan, man, you put a stinker on your resume. Shame on you. Ugh.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Match after that was Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi defeating Damage Control. This match really just kind of, the girls did all the work, and then Jade Cargill kind of came in and showed her power and cleaned up and got the victory for him. And I believe until Jade gets her feet underneath her, this is what it's going to be a lot of. It's going to be a lot of these tag matches, a lot of these triple tag matches where other people are going to do a lot of the in-ring work. She's going to get the hot tag. She's going to get the victory for the team, and then we're going to keep it moving. Again, her promos need work. Some of her in-ring work needs to be refined a little bit, and her memorizing moves that you discuss in pre-show, those things all have to get ironed out. So this is a way to break her in slowly and not send her down to NXT. I think one of the matches of the night, if not the match of the night, Sami Zayn defeats Gunther to win the Intercontinental Championship. I screamed and I ran around my house. I was so happy when this match was done. Sami Zayn hitting the Huluva kicks got me hyped. I was pumped. I could feel it coming. I thought this was a good match. You'd want to talk about psychology. Gunther, in this match, beats the living crap out of Sami Zayn. Beats him down, beats him down, beats him down. Sami Zayn continues to get up, continues to get up, continues to get up. Gunther says some stuff to Sami Zayn's wife and his kid, and that's kind of the trigger. That's the switch that gets flipped for Sami Zayn, who then goes to another place and takes it to another level and goes on to win the Intercontinental title. What did you make of this match? I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought the psychology was really well done. I thought this was the right call. Sami Zayn winning this title is great. It helps acknowledge him. It allows Gunther to now move on into that main event card, that main event scene. I thought this was a spectacular match. And really, at this moment, this was the lifesaver that day one needed.
Yeah, no doubt. And everybody in the Middle East community marked out beforehand. When you see his family and he's like, come on, Baba, it's okay. We're all like, hey, wait a minute. We did that thing with the meme where Leonardo DiCaprio was pointing at the screen and we're all like, Sammy, you said the word. Come on, Baba. That was awesome. We were all like, my nephew texts me. He's like, Sammy's Arabic? And I'm like, yes, come on. There's a little bit of him acknowledging that. It was great. So everybody in the Middle East
community. If you look at his pants have Arabic writing on them.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the nephew now is 13. He's not like, he peeks in and he obviously likes it, but he's not going to follow it week to week. So he was like, everybody marked out. And then the moment that was really beautiful, which I thought maybe could have been repaid the next night, which would have made the Doc super happy. But to see Kevin Owens acknowledge his boy and say, go get this shit done, was special.
Oh, almost brought a tear to my eye, dude. That almost brought a tear to my eye.
It was special. And to see the family interact with Gunther, man, look, Gunther, props to you. And I don't even think we're giving Gunther enough love for the run that he had. Gunther, you transformed your body. Even though you're a little bit soft in the midsection, it's okay. You're allowed. We could tell you were a big boy, and you're not going to just eliminate all your body fat that you had. Just go look. And I know you boys were ripping me, trying to dehumanize me and fat shame me, but that's not the point. You can't, you and Kenny cannot fat shame John McEnroe. I have a high level of confidence. I've already heard that shit. I'm already well accepting into the fact that I love me some calories. I love me some hummus, sugar, tabbouleh, Diet Cokes. I don't care. You can't fat shame me. I noticed it and it was clear. Gunther is soft in the midsection, but it's not like it's his fault. The man was 100 pounds heavier and he lost it all, but you could clearly see that he's got the body type of somebody that was fat and is now in great shape. So he's going to work it out and it's going to be no problem. But Gunther, my God, the man is just a throwback to the Bruno Sammartinos, the big dudes, the Hercules Hernandezes, and the man is just really awesome and talented. And we got to give him his flowers. He had a great run. And the way in which you know it's special is when the person who had the belt loses it to the next person and it's a big deal. It feels special no matter who it is. Gunther did the job of having the title, I think, 666 days. And kudos to you, Gunther. What a run. Great match. And it really at least helped a little bit turn the tide into the final match that we got, which was also special too.
Look, I don't think Kenny and I were fat shaming you. We just thought it was funny when the pot is calling the kettle black.
That's fat shaming. What does it have to do with anything? My honest opinion was,
were you fat shaming Gunther then?
No, I'm not fat shaming him. He's a world-class athlete who's paid to perform and look flawless. And body type is super. The boss is a bodybuilder. So if Triple H, look, all I'm saying is body type. Gunther was at the Intercontinental Championship level. Now, if he's going to get to the world title level, we're going to start having to kind of Photoshop some of that.
He's got to look like Tama Tonga looked on Friday night.
Exactly, like Roman Reigns looked.
I got you.
So, look, it's 2024. I'm sure they can digitally zap that shit out, you know? But look, he's got to work it out if he's going to be the world champion. You're going to take 1,000 photos, and you can't be looking wrinkly. You know, you can't have loose fat skin as the world heavyweight champion of WWE. And that's just no doubt about it. And he'll work it out. Maybe he doesn't have to, but it is funny to see that he does have it. And hey, if you're not going to point it out, that's fine. I'm a journalist and I'm allowed to speak my mind freely in regards to what I see. And I'm looking at it from the perspective of, I need this guy to market the company in a year. And so you got a year to get rid of that puffy belly fat, bro.
Anyways, it was a fantastic match. I think it was match of the night. It was a great, great match, and you're right. It shows what a good job you as the champion have done when everybody gets behind. When you're the heel and everybody gets behind the babyface to celebrate the babyface, and it's a big moment, and you go and you see what takes place then on Monday night, and it's a big moment when he's celebrating. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. This now leads us to our main event. We've got The Rock, Roman Reigns, Cody, and Seth. Now, I don't think this match went as flawlessly as everybody wanted. I thought this match helped lay groundwork for what we got the next night, and I thought this match really helped tell a bit of a story. I really think Seth Rollins is beat up. You've seen on Sunday, Seth was. It was hard for him to move around. It was hard for him to get out of the ring when The Rock showed up and he was going to hit The Rock with the chair on night two. Seth had a hard time getting to the back. He needed to be helped. I believe he's been dealing with a lot of injuries. I don't think his knee was ever as good as he said it was. And I think you kind of seen his knee failing on him in this match. So it led to it being a little bit clunky. It really felt like Cody Rhodes had to do a lot of carrying of this match because Seth was pretty beat up. In the end, The Rock and Roman Reigns win, sets up Bloodline rules. What were your thoughts on this main event of night one?
Look, knowing that most people predicted what was going to happen, we wanted to see The Rock and Roman. How are they going to tag together? Look, there were some great spots. You saw physicality. You saw The Rock really take advantage of being a heel. You saw the Roman Reigns really just move flawlessly. He looked like a world champion. He came in top, tip-top shape. And yeah, clearly Seth Rollins was grinding just to make the match. And look, for what it was, look, it was billed as one of the biggest tag team matches in the world, but really it was just overshadowed by the fact of what the result was going to mean for the next night. And really, it just needed to set up that, hey, it's Cody Rhodes going to have to face the world. And I think that what Michael Cole and the announcers really added to was saying, oh no, it's over for Cody. This loss is devastating. Oh, this makes it impossible for tomorrow. So, because look, in the end, we all knew what was going to happen. And to have it go down that way, it set the scene. So for a card that set the table and for the intention, that's what it did. Now, is it going to have some legacy moments? A couple. But no, by and large, Saturday night really was the appetizer for Sunday. It's not what we wanted. It's not how everything was supposed to go. The entrances, I mean, you got four guys taking up a lot of time for entrances. And look, it was good to see that at least Seth did not turn on Cody. It was just a straight up match. The match happened and The Rock got his moment at WrestleMania. And that's fine. It all makes sense in regards to night one having the heels win. And it set up perfectly going into night two. So it was a B match and it did what it needed to do to set the stage for Sunday.
I think the thing coming out of this match, something to just kind of put a pin in and remember for later on when The Rock does come back, there was a moment where Roman basically had Cody beat.
Yes.
And The Rock basically put his hand in there and said, tag me in, I want the win. And Roman acquiesced to The Rock. So again, questioning his tribal chief leadership right here. So just put a pin in that, remember that for later, because what you're getting now with Triple H at the helm and doing things with creative, we're going to talk about this when we get into the main event of night two. There are subtle things that he gives you Easter eggs for that you have to be responsible for and you've got to put together. There was a lot of stuff done in night two in the main event that you were like, holy cow, they've been telling us this the whole time. He tells you what's happening. You just have to figure it out. He does a great job of it. That leads us to night two. Drew McIntyre defeats a really banged up Seth Rollins by pinfall to become the new world heavyweight champion. However, Drew's hubris gets in the way, and he goes and he calls out CM Punk, who shows that his triceps in better condition than what we originally thought as he takes off his gigantic manacle brace and socks Drew McIntyre in the head, kind of laying him out, only for Damian Priest to come down and cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. You now have your new WWE champion. What do you think about this whole thing? I thought this was done really well. Again, a way to get the belt off of Seth. You give Drew some credibility and you show how basically everything that Drew has been saying about Seth, Drew has basically been doing. He is a hypocrite to the biggest fashion, telling Seth, you're not taking me serious enough. You're not taking me serious enough. You're looking past me. Only for Drew to kind of look past Seth and to be so focused on CM Punk and not really worry about anything else that's going on. Just have that tunnel vision on CM Punk, which allows Damian Priest to come in from behind and take that belt off him. Again, really good storytelling here. Puts Drew back in that chase mode to go get that. On top of that, he's got a CM Punk that is out there lingering. What were your thoughts on this transition that we had of the belt, basically going from Seth to Drew to Damian, and you have CM Punk playing a part in it all?
It was cinema, bro. With Seth crying, showing how much the belt meant to him, having the small moment with Drew, who we all felt like, wow, he really deserved it. It felt like, wow, you know what? People could recognize that he's a world champion. And then he has the interaction with CM Punk where it's a little bit more terse. And CM Punk's like, why are you coming and talk to me? More people are going to talk about me than your title win. and then you just thought for a second that maybe they're going to like really get into it and maybe there's some realness to this, and then CM Punk gets up and just annihilates Drew, blows the kiss. He has CM Punk made a WrestleMania moment. It's going to live forever. That meme is going to live forever with him blowing the kiss. It's already all over the internet. It's beautiful. And then when the reaction that CM Punk had when Damian Priest's music hit was beautiful, like, oh, like you could see the wheels churning in his head, like, oh goodness, I just set the table for something great to happen. And then Damian Priest wins it, a slam, and you do feel bad a little bit for Drew, but in regards to creative, they set the scene literally when the new era of WWE, they just said, okay, what was our biggest complaint like 2 years ago? We'd come on and we'd say, man, Raw sucks. They're just throwing matches together. And then AEW was telling beautiful stories with Cody, and then WWE's like, I think they just took notes, and Triple H was waiting until something happened where he could get the book. And then he said, okay, you guys want to see storytelling? I'm going to do storytelling on steroids. And I'm talking about not the cheap ones. I'm not talking about cheap Mexican steroids. I'm talking about...
talking about Trenbolone. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm talking about lab-produced, high-octane horse shit that just makes everything spectacular. I want to travel anywhere to see Drew fight CM Punk. Wherever that match is, I want to see it. The way in which they have set up feuds is nuclear. It's amazing. And it was great because it was just Drew talking shit nonstop. So what happens in return? CM Punk's like, if you keep fucking with me, I'm going to cost you. And not only did he cost Drew, he cost him at the highest level, which is going to piss off Drew. Drew tweeting during the match was fucking hilarious. And I just thought all of that in the first 20, 30 minutes of WrestleMania Night 2 was better than everything on Saturday. So it got me hyped. I was excited for it. I'm ready for the next phase. And poor Drew, poor Seth, but CM Punk comes away as a legend, and Damian Priest, good for you, because the way they played it was, oh, I just shut up all the people that told me I was stupid for not cashing in. The second guy to cash in at WrestleMania, it created a special moment, and he looked okay with the title. It was good. Damian Priest being the world champion is fine, and I think he's going to have a good run.
Yeah, you basically started the night off by ripping the entire top off of the can, and you were like, let's go. It was absolutely fantastic. Next match that we got was Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits defeating the Final Testament by pinfall in a six-man tag match in a Philadelphia street fight. It was a match. It was what it is. I think Scarlett is still laid out with the table spot. Not really sure what's going on with that. She just laid there for what felt like an eternity. LA Knight defeated AJ Styles by pinfall. We then got the Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton match. And Logan Paul ends up retaining his belt, defeating Kevin Owens, and pinning Randy Orton in the process. I thought this was a good match. This is the thing about Logan Paul. As much as we doubt him, and as much as we kind of doubt how long he's sticking around or what he's doing, the dude is a wrestling nerd. The dude loves the business. The guy is all in. And you can see it in his matches. He, at no point in this match, looked outclassed by a veteran like Kevin Owens or a veteran and a legend like Randy Orton. At no point did this guy look like he was the odd man out. I think we do not give Logan Paul enough credit. I think he is fantastic at what he does. He is such a freak athlete. It is unreal. The fact that this guy has such little experience in the wrestling business and is able to go in there with a generational star like Randy Orton and is able to go in there with a guy who's got 20 plus years of experience all over the place like Kevin Owens. These dudes are legit veterans who are at the top of their craft, and he looks fantastic in this match. Told a really good story, ends up walking out with his U.S. championship. What were your thoughts on the Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton match?
Ooh, it was good. Look, Sami Zayn returns the favor. Kevin Owens is, you know, to me, look, Logan Paul doesn't really need a belt to validate what he does. He's got a million followers.
No, at all.
He's got trillions of followers. He's got influencers that always want to come to his match. I show speed. I never heard of them. I never heard those three words together ever in the history of Everdom. And then I got my kid going, I'm looking over. It was the funniest shit ever. And he's barking and my kid's barking. I'm like, what are you doing? She's up there. She's like, that's I show speed. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? She's like, he's a YouTuber. And I'm like, oh, of course. That's why he's there. to draw additional eyes for the massive social media, which is fine. WWE's been doing that for years. It's like back in the day with Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson. And now WWE's like, we're not going to use celebrities. We're going to use YouTubers. And the sight of her standing up barking at the TV was hilarious. And for her to come and say, look, daddy, look at, I felt that was the first moment I felt old. I feel youthful. But for me to, I've never seen the man. I'm online a lot. I research, I'm online a lot. And I've never heard of iShowSpeed, never seen S, which is crazy. But now I know who he is. And Randy Orton kicking him was a WrestleMania moment. I was disappointed booking-wise because, look, I know Logan Paul can sell tickets and the guy that's going to get them, look, WWE is valuing titles. They're not going to just nilly, you know, just have it kind of shift hands quickly. But I thought Kevin Owens deserved a WrestleMania moment. And outside of predictions and all that, the man's been grinding. The man's been touring the world. And to give him a moment would have been great outside of Logan Paul. But the cheating was understood, the way in which it was done. Look, Logan Paul's a wrestler. He is a professional wrestler. And what you're seeing is a guy that dipped. It's crazy. You see a guy that dipped his toe in the waters. He recognized, wait a minute, I can talk. I have followers. I can get people to hate me because they hated me when I started blowing up online and I was the quintessential influencer. Nobody likes influencers. And then what really happened, which is beautiful for us in this business and in the WWE business and wrestling, is that somebody found out, holy shit, I'm a wrestler. And he recognized I could be a good wrestler. I have some of the stuff that people wait their whole careers for, charisma, the ability to be comfortable in front of large crowds, the ability to garner heat. So what probably has to happen is the notion of, wait a minute, can I perform in the ring? And that can be taught. So that's where some of the hardcore people like a Seth Rollins or a Bret Hart will be like, wait a minute, you know, you're just an influencer. But what he's done is he's put in the work to train and he's naturally athletic, which for some people goes to show you that maybe in the maybe for some people, just having that it factor needs to come first and then the training can come later. But the one thing that Logan Paul does have above most people, he's athletic. The man can move, he's agile, he can understand what he's being taught. And when you can combine wrestling skills with the stuff that he had, cuz we're looking at a future world champion. It's crazy to say, but Logan Paul will be a world champion on some level. And I hope he embraces the fact that, you know what? His calling in professional sports entertainment is to be a professional wrestler. He's got it. He's got all the tools. He can do it all. I hate when I see him on the screen. I hate that he wins. But when he comes out there, you want to watch it.
Yeah, he's got it. All of it. He's athletic. He's got the charisma. The guy has the ability to step in a ring and draw your eyes and take your attention away from whatever else is going on. So kudos to him. Next match was Bayley defeating Io Sky. I thought it was a good match. I don't think this was one of Bayley's classic matches. I thought it told a good story, and it was nice for Bayley to get the win. I was impressed. I think the big match of the night that everybody was waiting for was Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns. And I thought this match had so much in it, so much to unpack. Cody Rhodes obviously defeats Roman Reigns. The match included the Usos, who ended up taking each other out, Solo Sikoa, who was taken out by John Cena. The Rock shows up, and you then have Seth Rollins enter the ring only for Roman Reigns to spear Seth Rollins and knock him basically out of contention. You then have the Undertaker show up and take the Rock out. It was that spot. The Undertaker spot was actually meant for Stone Cold Steve Austin. I thought Stone Cold Steve Austin would have fit better, but it was cool to see the Undertaker in there. Seth Rollins ends up waking up, and the cinema of wrestling, right? When we tell you about storytelling, Seth Rollins told Cody Rhodes, he was like, I will be your shield against Roman Reigns. He showed up in his shield tactical gear. He knew that that would get under the skin of Roman Reigns. That was the moment that Cody needed to regain his composure because he was laid out. Roman grabs the chair. that Seth was going to use on The Rock and uses it on Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins falls the same exact way Roman Reigns fell in the ring ropes almost 10 years ago. So this is storytelling at its finest. This is like mafia boss storytelling. It is incredible. It is, if you love The Godfather, some of what you got in this match was very Godfather-esque. The things with Roman and Seth where Francis Ford Coppola, like, it was unreal. Anyways, Roman takes out Seth. Seth falls into the ropes. He's done. Seth had trouble getting into the ring. Let's be honest. Seth was on one leg. Roman takes him out. This is enough time for Cody to get back up and then do three crossroads and hit a Cody cutter or whatever it was. Pins him. 1, 2, 3. You have your new champ. It was unreal. Everybody came down to the ring to celebrate with him. This was a fantastic moment. This was awesome. This was unreal. It felt so good. It felt cathartic. There were shots of Roman crying up at the top, hugging Paul Heyman, and basically them having to go through and reevaluate. If you follow Roman on Instagram at all, Roman's back in the gym working out. He's preparing. He's going to take some time away. Probably won't be seen until SummerSlam. He's going to take some time away, but he's in the gym preparing. There's a lot going on now with the Bloodline that we're going to discuss here very shortly. But overall, I want to know your thoughts on this match, because I thought this was wrestling done at its finest. If you want to know what a wrestling match is supposed to entail, it is this. Yes, there was a lot of big names that just popped up. But if you look at what you got the Usos taking each other out. You got Solo and John Cena. They had a fantastic match where John Cena basically handed the torch off to Solo Sikoa. You had The Rock step in. The Rock was supposed to be taken out by Stone Cold Steve Austin. You have these ties to prior history, these ties to past matches that are all in this one match. On top of that, you have to realize this story isn't just 1 year long. This story is 2 years long. And there's so much that has gone into it, and you got all of that. Actually, this story is over 10 years long because of the Seth Rollins-Roman Reigns tie that is there. I thought it was so well done. And if you are a wrestling fan, there were so many little nuances in this match.
It was beautiful, cuz, man. Cody winning it. Look, it was funny because Roman Reigns' entrances have been averaging 8 to 10 minutes, 12 minutes sometimes, and I sent you it was like 4.5 minutes. He rushed down to the ring. Look. Some of the special music, I don't need any of that. I didn't need the live music performance of his song. I didn't need Rhea Ripley having live. I get it. It adds a little bit of entertainment value. But I thought his entrance could have been bigger, more grand just without it. But look, Roman delivered. And the false finishes, look, we didn't even talk really about the beautiful moments with The Undertaker, with John Cena, with the way in which The Rock looked when he was getting slammed by The Undertaker. It was special at the highest level, the psychology of the way it was told. You wrapped up so many stories. The way in which Seth fell kind of harkened back to The Shield breaking up, John Cena getting revenge on Solo. What it does is, when we say storytelling on steroids, you're tying up loose strings from stories that were told in the past. And for Roman Reigns to decide to forego slamming Cody with a chair to hit Seth Rollins was beautiful. And this is what people mean when they tweet, this is cinema. It was a beautiful match. Everybody loved it. The 1, 2, 3 with Michael Cole screaming. Now, to me, you know, I get it. It's a real reaction. But you got to remember, too, context matters. Kenny, when you're slamming me, I grew up with all the new titles when the new champion was announced. It was announced by one of the legends of all time. And you could just hear it in your head. And the new world champion. And
oh, bro, I'm going to tell you right now, you are so wrong for what you said. No, Samantha Irving announcing it was absolutely fantastic. Her crying gave the emotion that everybody else had. It was fantastic. You are so wrong.
No, I am not wrong.
Yes, you are way wrong.
No, man. I will say this.
Bro, look, a non-wrestling fan who has become a wrestling fan said, she's like, she is awesome at her job. That is an awesome moment. That was from my wife. She was excited. She thought what Samantha Irving did was fantastic. You are so out of line. Go on. Say what you got to say. You're out of line. Just know you're wrong. That's all. Listen, it's okay for you to be wrong now and again. It's okay.
Listen, new school, old school. Howard Finkel, man, was the best. And for him to announce it that way, you know, just everybody, the way in which we always remember it was bold. It was strong. It represented the new era of we're going to cry when we win. It's like, oh, okay. Mm. You know, to me,
bro, Samantha Irving is the best at her craft.
And then, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, come on. No. It's real. But
if you listen to this, tweet at Detroit Podcast, at Adam R, STROZ, and tell John how wrong he really is.
Listen, I can't have the wrestling community.
Samantha Irving is the best at what she does.
Listen, I can't have the wrestling community bash me this week. I might not even tweet it out because Jared Goff dunked on me and powerbombed me through the table. And now the wrestling community, I need a break.
Well, you're negative. Look at you. You're being negative right now.
I'm being over. No, listen. Go back and watch when Warrior beat Hogan, when the big moments happened, when Shawn Michaels beat Bret. And it was bold. It was strong. It wasn't some dude crying into the microphone. But it's just a difference. Look, some people appreciated it. But at the same token, this is a big moment and it's bold and she's like choking on her words like she couldn't get it out. Like you need to just wait a minute and then spit it out. Because look, Cody understood. He had her say it again without her stumbling through her words. So that was the only thing that was a critique. It was beautiful. It was special. Everybody, you just felt like, yes, it made you want to watch more. It made you want to see what Cody said after the match. It's and really, which I think now is happening, you really appreciated that, fuck, Roman Reigns was the champion for 4 years. And for that to happen, that's why you do it. 4 years maybe is a little long, but it was the right decision to have Cody lose last year. With whatever, when the documentary comes out regarding if the switch was a work or a shoot, it doesn't matter. Eventually, we got to see Cody finish the story in a beautiful way. It was believable. And everybody got to see Cody celebrate, and the moment where he turns the belt, you see, look, I thought it was great that the locker room came out, LA Knight's out there, which is kind of funny. You see his mom, you see, you know, to me though, old school, you don't need to call out Triple H and the Booker and Bruce Pritchard. I mean, everyone's going to boo Bruce Pritchard, but I get it. He's the guy that helped bring you back, and you want to kind of reveal that and stuff like that, but really was crazy to see, to me, the moment that kind of got me, like my hair standing up, was when he walked over to Nick Khan. And I'm like, holy shit, that's Nick Khan. That's the man. That's the guy that makes more money than Triple H. That's the money man. That's the guy that's taking this shit to the next level. That's the guy that's going to give Cody a fucking badass Rolex. Oh, that was special. Like Nick Khan, it almost had like if you go back and watch it, which I've done, it has like a Godfather feel because Nick Khan doesn't smile. He's like, the man is a real dude. Like he's a real guy, but he is like the definition of like a serious, hard-nosed motherfucker. Like in public,
he's business all day. Business.
All day. And the way he looked, it almost looked like a passing of the torch. Like, all right, man. Like the look that he gave him was like, look, we're investing a shit ton of motherfucking money in you. And thank you for the, you know, the little nod. Thank you for the $1 million merchandise sale. Now let's go do this. So that was cool. It was a special moment. Brandy getting the pop beforehand was special. Just to hear her say, finish the story. One thing, what'd you think of the mask? I thought it was cool, but I would have made it red and white on the mask. All white made it look, I don't want to say cheap. It made it look less than extravagant, which I kind of want to see in a mask like that. I thought it was beautiful, harkening back to something special. It just needed some color on the mask. All white, I get it, but I think the American Nightmare is synonymous with red and blue and some colors. But other than that, his entrance was beautiful. It was just beautiful. That win made watching WrestleMania for two nights, the pre-shows, everything worth it from top to bottom. And it was special to see his response, to see his post, the way in which he got emotional. It was just special all the way around. It lived up to the hype, and it's a new era, bro. It's the Cody Rhodes era, and by and large, I think in the short term, WWE is going to cash in on a lot of money with Cody as champ.
Oh, yeah, for sure. A lot of cashing in. I thought the mask was okay. I thought it was a little bit cartoonish.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought that last match was fantastic, man. I thought that was the feather in the cap. And if Triple H does nothing else for the rest of his life, he had this WrestleMania and he had his WrestleMania moment because this card was fantastic. Really quickly, because we've got to move on. We spent so much time breaking this down and we've got so much more to get to. I've got to get my dog to a vet visit. So we've got a lot to kind of speed through here. I take a 2.5 to a half point lead over you in calling the card as we start anew. I won night one. You and I split night two. I get the extra point because I got the most correct cumulatively over both nights. So I've got a 2.5 to a half point lead over you. Really quickly, I want to get into what you thought about the 45-minute segment between Cody Rhodes and The Rock on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, too long. It was not – look, here's my issue. Cody is a world champion. Now you got to act like a world champion. The dude's carrying the belt like I would carry it. And Cody, real simple. I know you wear a suit.
You get so worked up by some of the weirdest things.
No, it's not. Listen, this is a business, and it looks like a kid is carrying a toy. You are the world champion, and your frame makes it look bigger than you, and everybody's noticing that the way you carry it is awkward. Bro, all you got to do is real simple, unstrap the belt and hold it around the W like a champion. Stop holding it like a prop. Hold it like a champ, or you don't need to wear a suit when you have the belt now. You're the champ. You're the man. Wear an athletic outfit. Wear it around your waist. You don't. The first vision I have, he doesn't look like a champ. And it's a 45-minute promo that overshadows the champion. It didn't need to be done. I didn't like it. It was far too long. I get it. You're setting the stage for The Rock and telling the story. But this needed to be just 15 minutes. Let the crowd say congratulations. And you could have even delayed it one more week before The Rock wastes 20 minutes of airtime. You know, just having to have the what chance and him trying to stammer his way through it. I didn't like it. It wasn't worthy of a coronation of a legend. And I thought that it did Cody Rhodes a disservice.
I agree with you 100%. I don't think it was needed at all. I don't think The Rock needed to come out for this in any way, shape, or form. So, I thought this should have been Cody's moment. I didn't think we needed The Rock. I get what you're trying to do. I think you're right. One more week would have been fantastic. Later on in the evening, Jey Uso is now named the number one contender. CM Punk helps him get there by a little bit of interference. So Jey Uso is number one contender for Damian Priest's championship. Was this the right call? Should Drew McIntyre or Ricochet or Bronson Reed be the guy in that spot for the initial guy to challenge Damian Priest for his championship?
No, you built up Jay. He's been winning. You have basically what you consider a heel champion. So the next guy needs to be a positive guy, and that's Jey Uso. And look, man, the crowd's into it. He gets good crowd reaction. You can still do more to develop him as a singles competitor. But unfortunately, he's just going to be fodder for Damian Priest. And for Jay, he's just got to have good matches. He's going to lose.
All right. So then on, I think the big talking point was what we got Friday night. Friday night, yes. We got the next segment in the Bloodline storyline. Solo has basically claimed the title of Tribal Chief. Jimmy seems as though he was removed from the Bloodline. We got the introduction of Tama Tonga, who is now the heavy for Solo. Tama Tonga beat the shit out of Jimmy Uso. Tama Tonga looks incredible. It was fantastic to see him. And poor Paul Heyman, caught in the middle, tried to call Roman Reigns, and Solo grabbed his phone and smashed his phone. I think this is fantastic. The dial on the stove only goes to 10. It's been ratcheted up to 12. I thought this was awesome. And the Detroit crowd was so hot for all of this. What are your thoughts on this next segment for the Bloodline?
Beautiful storytelling all the way around. A++. Detroit deserved it. Tama Tonga has a great history. There's a lot of stories you can tell, backstories and all the stuff with Cody and AJ. And there's a lot of cool shit if you learn about Tama Tonga. Listen, I don't care that he's not Samoan. He's got history with Haku. And people, look, stop being so literal with the Bloodline. Sami Zayn was in it. Stop. Don't worry about it. Solo leading the Bloodline is the evolution of his character, which is absolutely beautiful. And real fast, Paul Heyman, one of the legendary Hall of Fame speeches in the history of talks. He did an amazing job as the old ECW guy. He had a line that pop the boys, can't say it here, but it went a little long. You need to have the Hall of Fame a different night, and I'm sorry, but you can't induct people that are over 80 years old. I'm sorry. The guy, the legendary performer that they inducted, it went far too long, and it didn't. It was crazy, but by and large, Paul Heyman, great speech, worthy of induction. The next step now, we're still in the fifth inning, baby, and now maybe a Bloodline Civil War cinema, bro. Everyone loved it. Nobody did not like it. Jacob Fatu maybe in the mix. Who's going to align where? And we're going to have it. It's going to be a Bloodline Civil War eventually. Who was really given the order is now the story of the day. And that's what you want to do in wrestling, is set up questions. Who set this up? Why is this happening? What does it mean for Solo? What does it mean for Jimmy, who got his ass kicked? So much good shit, and Detroit deserved.
Does Jade come to Jimmy's aid? What happens next?
What happens next? Beautiful storytelling. I can't wait. We're all about it.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic week for WWE. The one company, the other company, did not have such a good week. A lot of egg on their face.
Yes.
I want to know what your reaction to the CM Punk video being shown was, because I think this has backfired in a really bad way for AEW. I want to give you some quick comments. So after AEW airs on Busted Open Radio, a program that you and I like to listen to, and a guy who I really think is incredibly smart and is fantastic at his job is Bubba Ray. Bubba Ray had some comments on Busted Open After Dark after this Dynamite this past week, where they showed this footage, and I don't think it did anybody any good. I don't think it was smart to do. This was a Tony Khan call by all accounts. But Bubba Ray said, "Before I put my weary head down on my pillow, I will pray to God for AEW. And I will say, God, I hope they popped a rating tonight. I hope something positive came out of this footage or came out of tonight. Because when tomorrow comes, if that rating is not good, if they're not back at least 800,000, it's not going to be a dog piling on a rabbit. The rabbit is going to deserve the dog pile. This is not on the talent. This is not on the locker room. And most of the time, it never is. Across the board, it's on creative, it's on the booker, it's on the matchmaker. This company needs help. At this point, I hope even you diehards realize that. There's a lot of people who want to help. I've gone on record to say I would help for free. And if you think that's me politicking for a job when I just performed in front of 72,000 people as a special guest referee, you're out of your fucking mind. I think Bully Ray is so right on. I think we are in those old WCW days of AEW. They just keep shooting themselves in the foot, and they keep trying to basically box with God, and it doesn't work. Tony Khan ends up coming out, and he delivers his ratings number, and his ratings numbers were absolute dog shit. Yeah, they were in the 800,000. I think it was like 817,000. That's still not very good. Like, you're not this did nothing for you. Like, you just look stupid. I've said it before. Tony Khan is a mental midget. Tony Khan has a small man complex, and he's trying to go up against a juggernaut. What you really need to do, stop worrying about WWE. Stop talking about WWE. Stop talking about wrestlers that wrestle for WWE. Start worrying about your own product. Start booking better matches. Start doing better things to help get your talent over. Your talent is not happy with what you just did on Wednesday night. What were your thoughts on the CM Punk footage?
Yeah, embarrassing, because what you did was, I don't understand why nobody would have told him, great, you got another 70,000 people to see what happened, but in the end, you put over a guy that doesn't work for you. You don't get no
Everybody money. Was chanting CM Punk's name. It's nuts.
And you devalue a performer that could wrestle for you. So in the end, it was stupid. It was terrible. On the other side, though, I do agree with Will Ospreay addressing what Triple H said. It's great for him because, look, WWE is taking shots. And for a performer to have the notion that you're not a worker is ridiculous, especially when you're Will Ospreay and you have good matches. So, but it was maybe a little too personal. Maybe you could have addressed it in a little more classy way. But at 30 years old,
you didn't like the grinding on the boss's daughter comment?
I loved it. From a wrestling perspective and a little inside knowledge of knowing that. But, you know, we'll see. But, hey, if you got $10 million a year and you got a 4 or 5 year deal, you're not going to worry if you piss off Triple H, especially when Triple H has been taking shots. So Will Ospreay, good on you.
But here's the thing. Did Triple H actually take a shot at Will Ospreay? Did he say Will Ospreay's name? Hey, he didn't. He just said – it was just like – a conversation he was having with Pat McAfee on the Pat McAfee show where he was like, look, if the talent doesn't want to come here and work, I don't want you here.
Right.
But I want people who want to be here.
But Will Ospreay did come out and say that, hey, when I was negotiating, there was, you know, a notion that I was going to stay in England and part of my schedule was going to have to be a little reduced because of my family situation. And so for that kind of, you look, the boys kind of have a knowledge that certain things are going to be talked about and certain things aren't. And for Triple H to kind of put that out there, most people felt it was about Mercedes Moné and Will Ospreay and those that didn't sign with WWE. So for him to address it, I think, you know, it's good. Look, you're a performer. Triple H would have did the same thing. Triple H gets it. Look, Triple H liked it because in the end, in wrestling, it's all about, hey, get attention. But for Tony Khan, he's different. He is in charge of elevating his talent. And when you highlight somebody that doesn't work for you that is popular, all it does is remind people what CM Punk said is, you're not a real boss. You're not a guy that's about making money. You're about having, you know, cocktails with the boys and being a popular booker. There's a certain degree of needing that to succeed, but at the same token, you need to lay the hammer down and make some money, draw some tickets. That move didn't draw more tickets to the arena, didn't make the company more money. So for Tony Khan, he's battling a perception problem because in the end, it doesn't matter. It feels like the man is printing money. So if he wants to run a company that loses money, but he has an unlimited supply, we can just keep it moving. AEW's product is not as good as it needs to be. The storytelling is not there. The matches, look, if you're going to have a main event on Dynamite of Dustin Rhodes versus Samoa Joe, that's WCW Saturday Night shit. You need to move forward with that. You need to have better matches on your card. You need to have better situations to move forward. So AEW is just throwing matches together, and they're not hitting. You're only getting 4,000 people to your venue. So business in regards to perception is bad, and they got to turn their tide. And most importantly, outside of podcasters' opinions, the company took a negative perception in the locker room. There's no way that hardcore wrestling, those in the locker room are happy that they're showing, taking 5 minutes away from them to talk about a guy not in the company. It's embarrassing. It was wrong for AEW, and it leaves a stain that might be too tough to change in perception. So let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. Let's see how they rebound.
Yeah, they're going to have to rebound quickly because things are almost feel like they're like the table has shifted and everything is landsliding onto AEW. It is a bad, bad look.
Yes.
What was your show of the week this week? We got a lot of good stuff. Monday Night Raw was fantastic. SmackDown was fantastic. Dynamite was absolutely forgettable.
Yep.
I want to give my point to SmackDown because I think the more interesting stories that we've got going forward were on SmackDown.
No doubt. LA Knight versus AJ Styles, they win the triple threats. SmackDown was great. Cody busted out an old line from his wife that was insider wrestling. It was great. It was good. Detroit's crowd was into it. You get to see Jade Cargill. SmackDown was the show of the week, no doubt.
All right. You ready for some news and notes before we get out of here?
Hit me with this week's professional wrestling news and notes. What made your list?
This AEW star is currently done with AEW. According to Fightful Select, Matt Hardy is currently a free agent. While his contract was noted to have technically been set to expire in March, word within the company was that it was extended a few weeks through WrestleMania. There was not a reason given as to why the extension occurred, given that he did not have any apparent absence due to injury during his time. The report notes that those close to Hardy were told that he elected to let the deal lapse after not re-signing the deal that was offered to him. Hardy can pick and choose what he does next. This WWE star is going to take some time away. I don't think it's a big surprise, but Seth Rollins is going to be away for a while. It was revealed that Rollins will be taking time off following WrestleMania 40, as he should because he looks really banged up. Dave Meltzer addressed the plans on Wrestling Observer Radio, saying Seth is taking time off for injury. I don't know about Becky. I heard not that long, but the knee's a thing. He's got to rest the knee up for a little while. Earlier this year, it was reported that Rollins had suffered a torn MCL and partially torn meniscus on the January 15th episode of WWE Raw in a match against Jinder Mahal. Seth looked very banged up and in a lot of discomfort as he was helped to the back after Cody beat Roman. An AEW champion has been hurt. Added to the injury list after a match recorded on April 12th's episode of Rampage, AEW TBS champion Julia Hart came away banged up. One of the four matches announced for the recording saw Hart take on Layla Hirsch. Dave Meltzer discussed the injury during the match on Wrestling Observer Radio, saying Julia Hart injured her shoulder legit at some point in the match. We don't know how serious it is. Hart is currently building towards a story with Willow Nightingale at Dynasty with Mercedes Moné on the horizon thereafter for the winner of that match. And a WWE star is working on a return after an injury. Piper Niven, whose last match was on February 5th of 2024 at a main event taping, has been sidelined with a hand injury. If you watch SmackDown on Friday night, she was on SmackDown, but her hand was kind of off scene. You didn't really see a whole lot there. Recently, Niven provided an update during an interview with the Gorilla Position podcast, revealing how she got the injury, saying, "I broke my hand at training, trying to be a better performer." So obviously the universe was like, no, you're too good. It was like, hey, bro, you can't come on. You got to give everybody else a chance. She would go on to discuss the injury further, revealing that it's getting better, though there's still a ways to go, stating, "So yeah, broke my hand, unfortunately, and it still looks gnarly. This happened the 7th of February, so just over 2 months, but it's getting a little better. And now I have this gnarly little bone callus that I can't wait to back fist people with. So yeah, that's what I've been doing." At present, Niven isn't cleared to return to the WWE ring, but she hopes to receive medical clearance soon. She obviously was working on television on Friday night. This WWE star has been put on ice. Last week, we reported that former WWE star Ronda Rousey appeared for an interview with News Nation regarding the alleged sexual misconduct and culture surrounding it in WWE. In her interview, Ronda Rousey accused Drew Gulak of sexual assault when he grabbed a drawstring of her sweatpants. In a new update, Fightful reports that Gulak was pulled from several appearances over WrestleMania weekend. This included being removed from his seat at the Hall of Fame, as it was noticed that he was in close proximity to a group of Rousey's inner circle friends. Gulak didn't appear on this week's episode of NXT either, as No Quarter Catch crew Charlie Dempsey, Miles Bourne, and Damon Kemp appeared without him. Gulak's name was removed from their entrance-tron graphic, and Dempsey's entrance theme was used instead of Gulak's, which Fightful report was an intentional decision. Fightful also noted that they've been told that there's no creative plans for Gulak at this time. As of now, Gulak is still on WWE's website roster page, and there has been no announcement that he's departed the company. And that's going to do it for this week's wrestling news and notes.
Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast, bringing you great professional wrestling coverage. Shared with you guys this week my addiction to wrestling belts. And guess what? When the Doc buys a wrestling belt, Kevin Owens has to copy him and show up on SmackDown with the same belt. So was it the Doc's belt? Did Kevin Owens stop by my house? Stay tuned next week. Maybe I'll share it. Maybe I won't. We'll see what's going on in the world of professional wrestling with WWE, AEW, New Japan. The new IWGP champion is Jon Moxley. He's now the only member of the Shield that has a belt, so good on you. But again, he bled, so everybody's joking around that, you know, okay, you know, every single match, you don't really have to bleed. You're a talented wrestler. But congrats to the new IWGP World Champion, and a lot of good things happening. Jack Perry made a debut, made another wrestling situation, even though he got punked and bitch slapped in front of the world. He's still doing his thing, and he's still trolling CM Punk with Cry Me a River on his jacket. So a lot of good shit going on. A lot of good shit in the world of wrestling, and Adam and I will be here to document it all. Future editions of Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast are going to be legendary like they have been. Thank you guys for supporting. We love it. We love being part of the wrestling community. And for those of you that aren't down with that, I got two words for you. Suck it. See you guys next week.